Welcome to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to the examination of conspiracy theory, conspiracy fact, and those who promote these theories. I will be your host, Mike Bowler, as I examine a conspiracy theory, applying critical thinking and skepticism to better understand and seek out the truth behind conspiracy theories. And for this episode, I'll be covering the third part of the Illuminati conspiracy. So to do a little bit of a recap, in my last episode, I laid out the three basic conspiracies related to this Illuminati conspiracy. First, you had the Adam Weishaupt version of the conspiracy, the earliest manifestation of this conspiracy in the late 1700s. Enlightenment thinking was gaining momentum. Many of the middle class began to embrace the ideas of the Enlightenment, and various groups began to discuss openly the ideas of the Enlightenment and Enlightenment thinking. One of these organizations was known as the Bavarian Illuminati, led by Adam Weishaupt. And it's quite possible that the various monarchies and various government entities viewed the Enlightenment as at least subversive, and they undermine their authority. Sometimes, in some cases, it was almost considered treason. So when Bavaria outlawed secret societies, Weishaupt fled to France, and of course it's alleged that he fomented the French Revolution. While there's no real evidence that he was directly responsible for the revolution, he may have been one of the thinkers behind the general uprising in France. The second manifestation of this conspiracy involves post-Second World War confusion, frustration, and probably fueled by the international communist conspiracy within the United States and a failed playwright and writer, Myron Fagan, began to attack the various secret societies within Hollywood and the United States, and referring quite a bit to this Illuminati. In many cases, he was actually trying to attack Freemasonry, but in a three-hour recording in the 60s, Fagan produced this international, the communists being involved with a conspiracy to take over the world and to create a one-world government. And then we have this third manifestation, which is actually a play off of the second variation of the conspiracy. But instead of it being the communist, it's actually has to do with Satan controlling the world. A lot of heavy religious and occult basis for this Illuminati conspiracy. So for this episode, I'm going to first talk a little bit about the Enlightenment period and what was really happening there. And then I'm going to have sound clips, and I'll explore some of the more detailed of the Illuminati conspiracy, mostly pertaining to the second and third manifestations that I've mentioned. So let's start with the first incarnation of this conspiracy. And really, it's just an attack on enlightened thinking. The Age of Enlightenment, or simply the Enlightenment or Age of Reason, was a cultural movement of intellectuals beginning in the late 17th century Europe, emphasizing reason and individualism rather than tradition. Its purpose was to reform society using reason to challenge ideas grounded in tradition and faith, and to advance knowledge through the scientific method. It promoted scientific thought, skepticism, and intellectual interchange. The Enlightenment was a revolution in human thought. This new way of thinking was that rational thought begins with a clearly stated principles, uses correct logic to arrive at conclusions, test the conclusions against evidence, and then revise the principles in light of the evidence. Enlightenment thinkers opposed superstition. Some Enlightenment thinkers collaborated with enlightened despots, absolutist rulers who attempted to forcibly put some of the new ideas about government into practice. The ideas of the Enlightenment continue to exert significant influence on culture, politics, and governments of the Western world. Originating in the 17th century, it was sparked by philosophers like Francis Bacon, Baruch, Spinoza, John Locke, Pierre Bayle, Voltaire, Francis Hutcheson, David Hume, and the physicist Isaac Newton. Ruling princes often endorsed and fostered these figures and even attempted to apply their ideas of government in what was known as enlightened absolutism. The scientific revolution is closely tied to the Enlightenment as its discoveries overturned many traditional concepts and introduced new perspectives on nature and man's place within it. The Enlightenment flourished until about 1790-1800, at which the point the Enlightenment, with its emphasis on reason, gave way to Romanticism, which placed a new emphasis on emotion. A counter-Enlightenment began to increase in prominence. The Romantics argued that the Enlightenment was reductionistic insofar that it had largely ignored the forces of imagination, mystery, and sentiment. Now, in France, the Enlightenment was based in the salons and culminated in the Great Encyclopedia, edited by Denis Diderot and Jean-Laurent d'Alembert, with contributions by hundreds of leading intellectuals who were also called philosophies, notably Voltaire, Rousseau, and Montesquieu, and some 25,000 copies of the 35-volume encyclopedia were sold, half of them outside of France. These new intellectual strains would spread to urban centers across Europe, notably England, Scotland, the German states, Netherlands, Poland, Russia, Italy, Austria, and Spain. It was also very successful in America, where its influence was manifested in the works of Francophiles like Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, among others. It played a major role in the American Revolution. The political ideals of the Enlightenment influenced the American Declaration of Independence, the United States Bill of Rights, the French Declaration of Rights of Man and the Citizen, and the Polish-Lithuanian Constitution of May 1791. So what we see with, you know, well, with the Enlightenment, we do see a lot of influences, especially within the United States. Some of the ideas of the inalienable rights. Actually, you'll see a lot of Enlightenment thought in the Federalist Papers with the inalienable rights, such as life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. These are all Enlightenment ideas. And these ideas, of course, any new idea, any type of paradigm shift is going to have a counter to that. And this manifested with Augustine Birrell and John Robinson, who had been opposed to much of the Enlightenment thinking, and of course laying the blame clearly on the Illuminati, which of course by the time they began to do their writing, the Bavarian Illuminati didn't exist anymore. So with that said, I'd like to get into the second manifestation, which is the much later and actually some of the earliest forms of this conspiracy, actually the kind that we kind of see today, even though that today's conspiracies do refer to Weishaupt and his Bavarian Illuminati as being the originators who had fled, went underground into the various secret societies like the Freemasons. Sometimes they would also like to think of groups like Skull and Bones, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, all being part of this. But the first interesting aspect comes out of Myron Fagan. Again, Myron Fagan was this failed playwright who had come to believe that that Hollywood was being run by Jews and communists. And Fagan actually reintroduces the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. This is actually one of the documents that Henry Ford had began to publish here in the United States before the Second World War, only to later refute it. Now, I would like to do a whole show on the protocols, but for the purpose of this show, I'll kind of gloss over it again. I know I constantly refer to this document, but it's really nothing more. It was really actually a hoax. It was created based off of a play, but eventually it was determined to be a hoax and actually a forgery of a play that was fairly popular at the time. But the idea was, this was the minutes from a secret meeting of Jewish conspirators who were going to take over the world. And in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, there were sections, control the money supply, control the media, control industry, ultimately create a single world government. And of course, that's when the takeover would happen. And the United States, being this wonderful Christian nation that it is, looked at it as more proof that the Jews were evil and needed to be dealt with. But it would be the Second World War where people started realizing how ignorant that thought was. And of course, with the Holocaust and the 6 million Jews being killed in Europe, really kind of tempered that thought, though there are still those who believe that the Holocaust didn't happen, or it did happen, but the numbers are much smaller. Like, it makes any difference, one Jew in a gas chamber is one too many, for sensible people. But somehow, instead of the basic number of 6 million is the estimate, it could be larger or smaller, but somehow sending only 600,000 Jews to a gas chamber was much better than the 6 million. I don't understand that logic, but apparently to these people that means it's all part of a cover-up, and that's all part of this conspiracy. This will be a common thread within many of these conspiracies. But to get back to the second version of this Illuminati conspiracy, it's really more based on communists and the Illuminati controlling the media and industry, and thus with that being able to control government. And it's probably best if I play this clip. This is from Myron Fagan's recording, and this is kind of lays out what he's talking about.
The question of how and why the United Nations is the crux of the great conspiracy to destroy the sovereignty of the United States and the enslavement of the American people within a UN one-world dictatorship is a complete and unknown mystery to the vast majority of the American people. The reason for this unawareness of the frightening danger to our country and to the entire free world is simple. The masterminds behind this great conspiracy have absolute control of all of our mass communications media, especially television, the radio, the press, and Hollywood.
So this is really the basis for these Fagan's version of this conspiracy. Here's it could be a series of clips I've cut out from his recording, kind of laying out a few of his theories, and I will comment here in a little bit.
And that behind them are a comparatively small group of men whose sole objective is to enslave the whole world of humanity in their satanic plot of one world government.
And this is Fagan's basic concept, is to create a one government.
Let me clarify the meaning of the expression, he is a liberal. The enemy, meaning the one world conspirators, have seized upon that word liberal as a cover-up for their activities. It sounds so innocent and so humanitarian to be liberal. Well, make sure that the person who calls himself a liberal or is described as a liberal is not in truth a red.
And in this past clip, Fagan tries to link communism to liberalism, basically, I think, because of his belief that this is all part of a communist conspiracy, which he was very involved with, as in the attack on Hollywood.
This satanic plot was launched back in the 1760s when it first came into existence under the name of the Illuminati. This Illuminati was organized by one Adam Weishaupt, born a Jew, who was converted to Catholicism and became a Catholic priest. And then, at the behest of the then newly organized House of Rothschild, defected and organized the Illuminati. Naturally, the Rothschilds financed that operation.
Now here we have Fagan attempting to link Weishaupt to the Rothschild banking interests. Again, there is really no evidence that money ever transferred from Rothschild himself to Weishaupt. Weishaupt and his organization ended quite abruptly, and thus no real evidence seems to point to any type of connection to the Rothschild family. But Fagan needs to do this so he can press forward his anti-Jewish, anti-banking diatribe.
Now let's go back to the birth of the Illuminati. Adam Weishaupt was a Jesuit-trained professor of canon law, teaching in Ingolstadt University when he defected from Christianity to embrace the Luciferian conspiracy. It was in 1770 that the professional moneylenders, the then recently organized House of Rothschild, retained him to revise and modernize the age-old protocols of Zionism, which from the outset was designed to give the synagogue of Satan, so named by Jesus Christ, ultimate world domination, so they could impose the Luciferian ideology upon what would remain of the human race after the final social cataclysm by use of satanic despotism. Weishaupt completed his task May 1st, 1776. Now you know why May 1 is the great day with all communist nations to this very day.
So in this past clip, Fagan repeats the conspiracy history, which is a common tactic amongst conspiracy theorists. They like to keep repeating the conspiracy over and over again, making minor modifications. As you remember from the earlier clip, he just talked about Weishaupt being a Jew that converted to Catholicism as a Jesuit. Here he goes from Jew to Jesuit to Satanist. Again, this is another part of the common tactic, kind of ease the listener into the conspiracy, and eventually it will get worse and worse and worse. And of course, here he's bending a lot of the facts. Weishaupt and the Bavarian Illuminati would form up in the late 1770s, 70, and the Rothschild family had been in business since 1744, which is close to 30 years, give or take, which is not a recent creation of the Rothschilds. So this claim that the recent is bending the truth a little bit. And then you get into, he starts talking about the protocols of Zionism. This is a early reference to the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, which hadn't even been written yet at the time of the Rothschild, or at least in this case, where of the Bavarian Illuminati, because this was 1770s, 1780s, whereas the protocols were actually written in 1903. And of course, we know that this document was also a forgery, but we'll get into that here in a little bit.
One branch of the Rothschild family had financed Napoleon. Another branch of the Rothschilds, both branches, the real masterminds of the Illuminati, financed Britain, Germany, and the other nations in the Napoleonic Wars. Immediately after the Napoleonic Wars, the Illuminati assumed that all the nations were so destitute and so weary of wars that they'd be glad for any solution. So the Rothschild stooges set up what they called the Congress in Vienna, and at that meeting, they tried to create the first League of Nations, their first attempted one-world government, on the theory that all the crowned heads of European governments were so deeply in debt to them that they would willingly or unwillingly serve as their stooges. But the Tsar of Russia caught the stench of the plot and completely torpedoed it. The enraged Nathan Rothschild, then the head of that dynasty, vowed that someday he or his descendants would destroy the Tsar and his entire family. And his descendants did accomplish that very threat in 1917.
So Again, in this clip, trying to present more history, Fagan makes the claim that the Rothschilds financed France, England, and the other belligerents during the Napoleonic Wars, when in fact they didn't. They did finance England, and they were betting on England to be victorious in the Napoleonic conflicts, but never did they back or try to support France in its war. And then he goes into the post-war negotiations. That was the council, what is known as the Council of Vienna. But the thing is, this conference had nothing to do with creating a one-world government. There was never any talk of that. Actually, it was a series of meetings between the various victors of the Napoleonic Wars to redivide and reorganize Europe, pretty much typical of your standard treaties of the time. They'll take so much land, so much repayment, reparations, stuff like that. That was negotiated. But never did they all meet in one group, and there was never any discussion of creating a one government. And again, here we have a contradiction where the claim is that these countries were so indebted to the Rothschilds that they would form a one-world government. Well, they weren't. In many cases, all the countries were able to repay the debts that was incurred by that war. And Rothschild, like any other business in wartime, made a fairly hefty profit over the conflict. Now, I know some people might find that appalling, but this was, and this is, even to this day, a standard operating procedure amongst governments, that war profiteering is the norm. Not saying that it's right or wrong, it's just that it happens, and we have to learn to deal with it.
And every war since then, beginning with the French Revolution, has been promoted by the Illuminati, operating under various names and guises. I say under various names and guises, because after the Illuminati was exposed and became too notorious, Weishaupt and his co-conspirators began to operate under various other names. In the United States, immediately after World War I, they set up what they called the Council on Foreign Relations, commonly referred to as the CFR. And this CFR is actually the Illuminati in the United States, and its hierarchy, the masterminds in control of the CFR, to a very great extent, are the descendants of the original Illuminati conspirators.
Now here we have Fagan creating a modern version of the Illuminati conspiracy. Now up to this point, he talked a lot about the 1770, 1780 version, and the fairly close proximity in time to some of these events. Now he literally jumps 130, 40 years into the future and starts linking modern day, or for the time, modern day organizations to the Illuminati. Now he references the prominently in the past clip was the Council on Foreign Relations, which was a think tank basically on foreign relations. They actually publish there's a publication, they're still around, where they discuss issues with various foreign relations. I mean, it's about the simplest I could put it. The idea was to examine U.S. foreign policy, how we deal with Europe, Asia, Africa, and perhaps in a way give ideas to those who would be involved with foreign policy, ideas on how to conduct foreign policy. One of the failings, I believe, of our government is we do not have a consistent foreign policy, that countries like England, we'll use them as an example, their diplomats and their those who work in foreign relations, foreign policy, are careers. These are career jobs. You go to school for them. There's, we might call it here in the States political science, but over there, there are actually those who will, when they graduate college, they will go into the diplomatic corps. And the British foreign policy has been pretty stable from government to government. I say relatively stable because there is still some political input to it, but not as much as it here is in the United States, that every 4 years we will get an entire new crew of those who will be involved with foreign policy, and they may only last 4 to 8 years. So this idea of the Council on Foreign Relations having any, and of course anything to do with, you know, with world government is quite circumstantial. There are those who have looked at, examined the concept. It's a viable alternative, but certainly amongst most conspiracy types, especially like Alex Jones and many of them, that the idea of handing over some sovereignty to a world government is against everything that they would believe.
There is a similar establishment of the Illuminati in England, operating under the name of the British Institute of International Affairs. There are similar secret Illuminati organizations in France, Germany, and other nations, operating under different names. And all these organizations, including the CFR, continuously set up numerous subsidiary or front organizations that are infiltrated into every phase of the various nations' affairs.
Now again, Fagan wants to make sure that we keep the foreign aspects of this Illuminati conspiracy viable to the American version. So, of course, he has to mention that there's similar organizations in Europe.
When and if their blueprint for world control, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, is discovered and exposed, they would wipe all the Jews off the face of the earth in order to divert suspicions from themselves. If you think this is far-fetched, bear in mind that they permitted Hitler, a liberal socialist himself, who was financed by Krupp, Kennedy, the Warburgs, and the Rothschilds, to incinerate 600,000 Jews.
So here again, he messes with history a little bit. Of course, trying to link our Council of Foreign Relations, the British version of that, and trying to link international banking to something that never really happened. Hitler was not financed by anyone. His government may have received various bits of financing, but Krupp was an industrialist. He was not a banker. Kennedy was not a banker. He was a rum runner, ran a few businesses. And then, of course, having to link it to the Warburgs, which is supposedly, you'll find in the later in the recording that Warburg is supposed to be a Rothschild establishment in the United States. Again, he was a banker, but there's no evidence that money from the United States was ever paid to Adolf Hitler. And of course, trying to link that money to the Holocaust, where he again misrepresents the numbers, the classic the estimate of those perished in the Holocaust is roughly 6 million. Here he says 600,000. So Fagan is clearly has been a Holocaust denier by screwing with the numbers. This is a tactic of the Holocaust deniers to try to make the numbers smaller than they really were. Again, just somehow make that sound better. Personally, one Jew in a gas chamber, because he's Jewish, was one too many.
But at all times, the operations of these organizations were and are masterminded and controlled by the internationalist bankers, who in turn were and are controlled by the Rothschilds.
And of course, this version of the conspiracy has to be linked to international banking and the Rothschilds, that is, Jewish banking. This is, again, the premise of this particular conspiracy, though those who try to promote an Illuminati or elite trying to run the world usually try not to point out that this is a Jewish conspiracy, but that it is a elite conspiracy, though there are a few that still wants to use Jewish conspiracy as part of this one world government and this government takeover. And this pretty much covers the first two versions of this conspiracy. We have the early one, where it's part of this, the Enlightenment and the counter to the Enlightenment. And then a remake, so to speak, into this elite becomes the industrialists and the bankers and, again, the scientists, the government, all being a part of this conspiracy. And in the next show, I will actually go into the lunatic fringe. If you thought this was crazy, you haven't heard anything yet.
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
And for this week, I have no real announcements other than I was interviewed Saturday the 28th on a podcast, The Side Project. It's actually a local here for Illinois. And Jim Gabel, who runs the podcast, had me on to talk about conspiracy. So I'll have a link to that show on my show notes. So be sure to check that out. And I have no real announcements. I do have a few projects that is in the works. Hopefully they'll be ready. I could probably make those announcements next time around, I'm hoping, or at least one of them. So stay tuned, and we will talk to you later. Thank you for listening to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy. You can find my show notes and links to research material at mikeboehler.com. That's MikeBohler.com. Feel free to leave me feedback at feedback@mikeboehler.com. If there's a conspiracy you're interested in or wish to contribute more information to this or previous topics, feel free to send that to research@mikeboehler.com. A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy is a proud member of the Dumbass Media Network. Be sure to check out other great podcasts at dumbassmedia.info. Intro music is Unchained Tsarina from danosongs.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Thank you. Good night.